Hello, everybody, and welcome back. It's been a while since we've recorded an episode of the podcast, but we're excited to bring it back this year with new content and some new amazing guests. I'm your host, Elaine Gisler, and today I have the pleasure of being joined by Brian Points, president and founder of Points Consulting. Thank you for joining us on the show today, Brian.
Thank you, Elaine, for having me.
Great. Well, happy you can be here. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself, Brian?
Sure. I'm an economist, and I own Points Consulting, which is a consulting company focused on economic development and real estate. I live in North Idaho, specifically in Moscow, which is a city way up in the Panhandle area that's closer to Spokane than it is to Boise. So that far up. And wow. I've lived here for the most part of my adult life. I grew up in Boise and moved up here to go to college at the University of Idaho and have mostly stuck around since then. And I'm married and I have four lovely daughters.
Oh boy, the only man in the house. Uh-oh. Well, thank you, Brian, for being here. It's been a pleasure to work with you in the short time that we've been working on this project. But Brian, tell us about Points Consulting and how the partnership with San Juan County began.
Absolutely. So as I mentioned, our company, we focus on this intersection between land use, real estate, and economic development. So it's a lot of words that some people know, but not necessarily everybody knows. So basically, economic development has to do with creating jobs and increasing wealth and prosperity for regional economies. Land use has to do with the decisions that communities and states have to make about how land is going to be used, which is not as laissez-faire as people may sometimes think that it is. And then real estate is just, you know, the market for how that land is used, whether residential, commercial, industrial, whatever. I've worked in 36 states over the past 15 years, mostly on these types of topics. Over this past 5 years, housing needs assessments and housing market studies has become a really hot topic and something that a lot of communities are looking into. So that's what we're doing with San Juan County. We were selected after the county published a request for proposal, which is basically just a way for that government agencies will hire professionals. And, you know, you kind of put out a solicitation and say, this is what we need. And then the professionals will find it and respond to it. And you all thought we were qualified to do that work, which is how we were selected to do it. And I guess we started this process. I'm gonna look at the calendar here. It's December. I guess we started in about November. So we're still kind of in the early stages of the project.
And we're really working on the planning because the public meetings won't take place till the end of January. So we've produced some flyers and social media posts and all of this we're getting ready to launch this project. So Brian, what is a housing assessment and why is conducting one for San Juan County important?
So a housing assessment looks at the factors of supply and demand affect the housing market. And supply is the lands that can be used for building residential and how many units have been built over the past few years, what types of units. We talk a lot about things like density, which we'll probably get into later, and the demand is what's needed. So you look at all the different kind of cohorts or types of people within a market, from people who want super high-end luxury single-family homes to people that are just looking for, you know, a manufactured housing unit or multifamily unit. That's all fills in what we consider demand from an economic perspective. So we're putting those two factors together to say what's going on in this market. And if you just kind of take a cursory glance at the market and see what is out there, I think it's easy for people to say, well, it's fine. You know, people build houses, people move here. What's the big deal? But there can be a lot of missing pieces, a lot of people kind of left on the sideline from that process who can't afford the the cost of the units being built. The developers may very well be aware of where that demand is and want to build at a lower cost, but they could be held back from doing that due to land use regulations, zoning code, neighborhood expectations or city expectations and things like that. You know, in a lot of places, just, you know, speaking of multifamily, that's something that multifamily or apartment buildings or a unit that somebody would rent, cities can have a lot of restrictions against that, which can effectively prevent people from coming into that community who would want to contribute as workers. And especially in places as remote as San Juan County, you need to ensure that they can both live and work in that community, because it's not feasible oftentimes for people to say, oh yeah, I'm going to live out here, you know, 40, 50, 60 miles away and drive in. They just won't take the job, and then they won't come there, and then you won't have that contribution. And then you may have some, ultimately some risk that the employers in that community consider it a less desirable place to stay and do business as well, because they can't find the workforce. So those are some of the factors we look at. You know, to put a cap on that, it's the demographics, the building trends, what kind of income characteristics and employment characteristics that people have. Those are some of the quantitative things that we look at. And then we also are very interested in the qualitative things, which is our conversations with community members and business leaders and government and nonprofit leaders, because it helps us understand those pinch points and some of, you know, these more anecdotal situations that that are contributing to the housing market.
Right. And I think I've been in San Juan County a little over 2 years now, but after I spent about a year assessing our situation and realized that there are companies that want to come in and move to Utah, we'd like some of those smaller companies to come here. But when they're looking for 30 or 40 employees, or we've got existing companies looking for employees and we can't find them because we don't have the housing, that's when I decided that it was imperative that we work toward a housing assessment to tell us more about the county and here we are and where do we need to go, and sort of map out maybe how we're going to get there. So the housing market is private sector driven. So how could a study commissioned by a government agency help to make anything better?
That's a good question. I'll answer that in at least two different ways. Number one is that the housing market is private sector driven, but again, it's not as wide open and laissez-faire as people may think that it is. If you look at any particular community, it's going to be divided up into zoning districts that determine what can and cannot be developed within that district. And if you're just casually driving around, it's not as if you're going to see lines spray painted on the streets saying, oh, this is, you know, single family one, and this is light industrial. People don't necessarily know that, but it is kind of that the DNA that determines what's going to happen in the future of that city. So we look deeply at that type of thing to help us understand what are the constraints, the land constraints that may be preventing the market from meeting the demand. And we've touched on some of those, but again, oftentimes it's things related to density. Most cities have something that says you can only have X number of dwelling units per acre, or you can't exceed these height requirements, or, you know, things of that nature that basically ensure that it remains as a very single family oriented environment. And, you know, we're not opposed to single family housing at Points Consulting. And we just try to come help communities understand how to solve their problems. And oftentimes density is one of those ways that that problem can be solved. But when you're introducing density to communities, it needs to be done in a suitable way and in a suitable place, so it's having mitigated impact on that community. That's the first way that I would answer it. And the second way I would answer it is that we see our role in doing these studies is to provide answers for everybody, mm-hmm. right? This isn't and I know you feel the same way about this, Elaine. This is not a study that is going to be, you know, printed in a pamphlet and then put into four city halls and nobody's ever going to see it.
Exactly.
We're seeking to create some infographics and some external facing material that is going to help recruit people mm-hmm. who can build houses, the developers, the more residents, that kind of thing, that would help your communities to thrive further. So there's so much unclarity in the residential housing market, our data, our report, our recommendations helps existing landowners and residents understand what their opportunities are, even if that's very small scale, could be small scale or big scale. It also helps people from outside the community understand what's there. One thing you realize working in this industry as long as I have is that real estate is a very herd mentality kind of industry. So if, you know, people usually want to do what everybody else is doing because that's considered lower risk. If you want to kind of break a stigma or an expectation, providing data and forecasting and, you know, removing some of those cloudier areas of understanding is a great way to do that.
Yeah. And I think a lot of times people don't want to think about having sort of mixed use housing where you could have, you know, apartments or condos for rent, especially in an area where people might be coming into our area, not sure they really want to set down roots and live here. There is a job available, but they do want to come here. They move here, you know, rent an apartment, especially if they're in their 20s. You know, they don't want to cut grass and have this big responsibility of a house, but it gives them a chance to really settle in into the community and then decide, hey, this is a great place to live, raise kids. So I think we're going to stay and set down roots and then move on to a house. So, Brian, what is the process for conducting the housing assessment?
So in the early stages, we're doing this kind of background and planning work that you talked about. And starting towards the end of this month and going into January, it's going to be gathering a lot of data so we can establish what's the baseline, what's normal, you know, how many units have been built, at what types of units over the past 10 years, what are the income levels, what are the race, ethnicity characteristics, all these types of things. So that period of the data collection and analysis goes for a couple of months. We also look at special interesting topics during that period of time, like short-term rentals and accessory dwelling units and some of these trendier topics that people are always interested in. And then we merge that together with the qualitative stuff that we're doing in the interviews and the town halls that I'm sure we'll talk more about here in a few minutes to paint the full picture. You don't get a holistic picture just looking at spreadsheets. You have to talk to people. You have to feel their pain, see their faces, hear
community
about their
input.
Stories. Yeah, get the community input. And then at the same time, we're also looking at things from more of a topographical and land use viewpoint. So we'll look at the zoning regulations and boundaries, the zoning maps. We'll also overlay that with, you know, frankly, there are areas where you can't build anything because it's in a floodplain or the slopes are too steep or there's, you know, an existing easement that prevents you from building. So we look at those kind of constraints as well. In certain occasions, we also look at resource capacity. You know, water in certain communities is an issue.
And that is a big water is a big concern here in our community. Plus the fact that 93% plus roughly is public land. So that leaves a limited amount of buildable land. So, you know, all of that has to be taken into consideration, I'm gathering.
Yes, exactly. That's a big thing. So, you know, if you have land that's owned by the BLM or the Forest Service or something like that, that's not necessarily usually available to be built upon either. And you may have to do some transactions or negotiations with the federal government, which is always a fun experience. So we look at those constraints, the land, the water, anything else that may come into play there. So that gets us in this study, that'll get us into the spring. So around April or so, we start putting together our final recommendations, our housing forecast, and then present that to Elaine and to the people in her steering committee that she's kind of selected to be the first to be our sounding board for the material we put out. And then once that's agreed upon with that committee, then it goes out to the general public.
So, Brian, what can residents expect from the housing assessment and how can residents help to make sure this is a successful effort?
Yeah, absolutely. We do always want to hear from community members, and it's something I feel like I always have to emphasize because oftentimes there's this kind of expectation that gets built up by community members that we're the guys that are coming in as heavies to tell them to do X. And that's just, you know, that's not the case. Like I said, we don't have any preconceived conclusions about what we're going to say. We're going to look at the problems and we're going to look at the constraints and look at what the communities are amenable to, and we're going to make recommendations based on that. We do push a little bit in areas that we feel like it would be a healthy change, even if there's a little bit of initial resistance to that, but we're not trying to be overly forceful about anything. So when we say we want to hear from people, we truly mean it. All income levels, all race ethnicities, all age groups, renters, owners, you know, we want to hear from everybody. So these town halls that we're going to be conducting in Monticello, Blanding, down in the Navajo reservation at the end of January, that's where we want people to show up. Elaine and I will have to talk about how, what other means we're going to set up, but I do want there to be some other means for people who can't come to those meetings. So maybe that'll be an email address or some other way that they can send information to us.
Yeah. And we really want to reach out to the entire community. And I think your experience in working with the indigenous communities and in other states is really what was important to us. And we want to include those voices from the indigenous community. And we are going to have a hybrid when we have these meetings so that people can dial in on Zoom or attend in person. And we really, and we're also going to put out a survey. So we're going to do quite a bit to support making sure that voices throughout the community are heard. And Brian, what changes do you think will come to San Juan County after the housing assessment based on your experiences in other areas?
So one of the things we often see is a boost that happens afterward. And I attribute that to the providing information into a void. So where there's a lack of information, there's always going to be some hesitancy to invest or to move. And I know from my experience doing this, and I don't know how many places we've done it now, that developers will go to our meetings or they'll contact me afterwards and they'll say, hey, I kind of want to do this thing. You know, what do you think? So they really pay attention when studies like this are done. And they also, it's just the fact that you're doing it is a signal that you're taking it seriously. And you know that you recognize that the market isn't quite working for some reason or another. So that means a lot to them. You can also expect to see some level of recommendations on those underlying structural things, the things that people rank and file, citizens don't pay attention to, like the planning commissions and the public hearings and that kind of stuff. Stuff really matters. It makes a big difference.
It sure does. It sure does.
As boring as it can seem to a lot of people, it really does make a difference. But you can't just go out there and blaze that trail and be like, boom, we're going to do this. We're going to put this, 40 unit apartment complex here. There's some, it could be years of work that go in behind the scenes before that's even possible.
Absolutely.
To do.
Anything can happen. What do you do if citizens express that they don't want new growth, they don't want new residents, and they're just fine the way their community is? And why are you trying to encourage a bunch of new people to move into our area? How do you, and I'm sure you've gone through that, and how do you handle that? Or what advice do you have?
Yeah. So this gets into our, how do we have the right touch for each community that we're working in? There are communities that are committed to growth and development. And for them, we can recommend policies and come up with pretty aggressive forecasts on what their future is going to be. For communities that are really prefer slow growth, low density, that type of thing, the situation is a little more complicated. I have yet to run into a community, let me put it this way, I've yet to run into a community where that contingent literally makes up more than half of the population. They can be a significant proportion, and I'm not saying that that proportion should be ignored, but I'm saying that the volume that it can be produced by a small group of people often outweighs by the actual number of those people. And that's something that we try to pay attention to as well. You know, what are the actual dimensions of public sentiment? So if the community, if the majority of a community genuinely doesn't really want growth, well, then I'd say we just come up with some recommendations. And the leadership doesn't want it, then we would come up with recommendations that would allow that kind of status quo to continue while still providing for means of people to to exit and to come in and to age in place. So even in situations like that, things like accessory dwelling units are really important because people, you know, when you're 80s, you don't necessarily need a, you know, a 3,000 square foot house to walk around in, right? So there's still adaptations and recommendations to be made, even in communities that are really, really have a strong preference for limited growth. Communities that want to stay exactly as they are never get what they're looking for.
Interesting. They just don't.
They transform in one way or another. And, you know, oftentimes it's kind of a slow decline because they're not seeing that the type of people who are living there will eventually age out. And if you're not doing anything to provide a lifestyle and job opportunities to the next generation, then there's nobody that's going to want to, you know, stay there. So I generally am against, if I had it my way, I would tell communities, don't expect that to work.
Right.
You know, but I also would tell communities, don't, it's also not a great idea to just be full out. Every type of development, every type of building is good because then you lose your identity.
Yeah, you have to find a happy medium of what will work best for the community. And I know that it takes, you know, living out in which we are in a rural area, but we do lack a lot of amenities. And hopefully some of that, which does mean we have a lot of sales tax revenue loss because we lack, you know, a lot of those key NAICS codes. But I think this is great. I'm very excited that you in Points Consulting is going to be working on this project. And I hope that when the project is completed, we'll be able to work. We're going to work with all the communities involved. And also, I hope that we can get some support from the state government and the legislators, get people to listen, work with nonprofits, and really take our show on the road is what I want to say. So, Brian, thank you so much for being here. And if people want to learn more about you and Points Consulting, where is the best place for them to go?
Points-consulting.com. And if you're into LinkedIn, we provide pretty regular updates on what we're doing there as well.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Brian. I appreciate you being here. And thanks to our listeners for tuning in. And make sure to subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss any future episodes. And we'll bring Brian back late in the spring after the assessment is completed to have some discussion. So thank you. And we look forward to seeing you the next time.